That which we have seen and heard declare we unto you, that ye also may have fellowship with us. And truly our fellowship is with the Father and with his Son, Christ Jesus. These things write we unto you, that your joy may be full. This then is the message which we have heard of him and declare unto you, that God is light, and in him is no darkness at all. If we say that we have fellowship with him and walk in darkness, we lie and do not the truth. But if we walk in the light, as he is in the light, we have fellowship one with another. He that saith he is in the light and hateth his brother is in darkness even until now. He that loveth his brother abideth in the light, and there is none occasion of stumbling in him. From the first chapter of the first epistle general of St. John. I, if I be lifted up from the earth, will draw all men unto me. Yet a little while is the light with you. Walk while ye have the light, lest darkness come upon you. For he that walketh in darkness knoweth not whither he goeth. While ye have light, believe in the light, that ye may be the children of light. He that believeth on me believeth not on me only, but on him that sent me. And he that seeth me seeth him that sent me. I am come a light into the world, that whosoever believeth on me should not abide in darkness. From the 12th chapter of the Gospel according to St. John. Jesus said, "The images are visible to humanity, but the light within them is hidden in the image. The light of the Father will reveal itself, but his image is hidden by his light." Thomas, saying number 83. Jesus said, "I am the light that is over all. I am the all. The all came forth out of me, and to me the all has come. Split a piece of wood, I am there. Lift the stone, and you will find me there." Thomas, saying number 77. Jesus said, "The person who is near me is near the fire, and the person who is far from me is far from the kingdom." Thomas, saying number 82. So, hello again. And pull up a seat and relax. It's long after I should have posted one of these. I just had too much to do on Sunday, and then Monday and Tuesday got away from me, and so here we are on Wednesday, and finally I've got a bit of a chance to do some recording without being interrupted. So, today we're going to explore God as light. That's the intent for the week following the second Sunday after Trinity. And I should also mention that last week was John the Baptist Day, which I won't really explore this time, but I will explore John the Baptist at some point in the future. And it is also the, last week was also the St. Alban's Day. And St. Alban is the patron saint of our greater church, our international church. St. Alban is a figure who is associated with esoteric things. He's also the first martyr of Britain, or the first British martyr, apparently. And he became the first British martyr. He was a legionary in the Roman legions, and he was protecting Christians from persecution by the Roman authorities. And one day, one of the Christians he was protecting or harboring or hiding was a Christian priest that he was hiding in his house. And his neighbors informed on him, as neighbors are wont to do it during times of tyranny. Some things never change. So what happened was he got wind of the fact that the local constabulary were going to come down and take his friend, the Christian priest, away. And he'd converted to Christianity because he was very impressed with the Christians, with their morality and their abilities, and just generally their upstandingness and the value of their philosophy. And so he swapped clothes with the priest. And so when the gendarmerie came down, the legions that were the legionaries that were involved with the getting rid of Christians, he was taken instead of the priest who fled and vanished and disappeared and apparently got away. And so he was being taken down via some sort of road that used a stream or something like that. And he prayed to God, and God made the stream dry up, the river dry up, the little river. Somehow this meant that it delayed them getting back to where they needed to get to. But they still got back there. So I'm not quite sure how that really worked. But it obviously shook up some of the people that were involved in getting him back to where he was supposed to be put on trial and executed. But eventually he got back there, and he was taken before the person that was supposed to execute him, and that person threw down his sword and refused to do the execution. And that might have been a miracle of God's working, or it may have just been the fact that him being a legionary himself, he was recognized, and perhaps even recognized by a brother soldier, a fellow legionary who perhaps felt some considerable loyalty to him. I don't know. The story's a bit hazy. So anyway, he was taken off to a different spot. He was, in fact, beheaded, decapitated, and in the place where he was killed, a spring sprang up and new water poured forth out of the ground. So he's a very British saint, because the British saints have a lot of examples of saints and heroes where springs come up in the place where they have been, or where they've walked, or where they died, or where they were born. And so he's definitely very, very much in the spirit of all of the other British saints that are out there. Now, this brings me to what his name is. Of course, his name is Alban, but that doesn't really sound like a name so much as it sounds like a reference to his Britishness, because long before Britain was called Britain, after the Brythonic tribes that inhabited the place, it was always called Alba or Alban or Albion, and which basically means white. It was the white place, and some people have posited that this had to do with the White Cliffs of Dover, but much more likely is that it was really to do with the fact that it was covered in white cloud most of the time. If you ever looked at it or looked for it, all you would see was this white cloud that covered it. So it tended to be known as, I think the most familiar term that we would be aware of would be Albion. And Alban would just mean the British guy. And since the Romans were both the people that ended up, that were the ones that named Britain as Albion, and also named the, during the canonization process, named the saint, it would seem likely that we don't really know what his name was. He was just the British guy, the Albion guy, St. Alban. So it seems very likely to me that we'll never know who he really was. But for some reason, he is associated with esoterica, and in particular, some people have said that he had something to do with Roger Bacon and a bunch of other alchemists, including the Count of Saint-Germain, in that he was supposed to be reincarnated again in these personages. Now, whether or not that's true, I think, we would only be guessing. Nevertheless, that is why he was taken as the International Church's patron saint, I believe, since we have a love of all things esoteric in this church. So, just wanted to get that out of the way before we get back to God as light, because the two things dovetail quite nicely, especially when you think about all of those other all those other different ways that we can think about light. Light not only has very positive connotations, but also has some negative connotations, as you would be aware from the old Latin word for light bearer, Lucifer, and the various other apparently enlightened people that call themselves Illuminati, Illuminists, or various other different things. Actually, the Eleniki, the Greeks, their name actually means children of light or sons of light. So there you go. There's another example of so they're the children of Helen, but in this case, Helen is light. It means light. And there is a connection between the name Helen and the word Helen for light, even though one has a double L and the other one doesn't, or a double lambda and the other one doesn't. So these are interesting things when it comes to the world of esoterica and going into things deeply and going into the hidden things and discovering what's really going on. So I made I gave you a bunch of readings there, and you'll see that they refer to God as light in various different ways. So in one of the readings, God as light is talking about light as love. That if you do not love, you're not walking in the light. If you do not love your brother, you're not walking in the light. There's also a reference to there's also a reference to when you do love your brother, there'll be no stumbling. So no sinning, no missing the mark, but equally just no stumbling in the sense that you won't miss your footing. Because of course, when you're in the dark, you don't know where you're going, and so that gets to the part of the second reading that I talked about, or I read, which had God as light being to do with knowing where you're going, and that's why you should be, when you're in the light, you should walk in the light. When you've got the light, you should walk in it, because that way you know where you're going. So, light is something that makes actions transparent, as in the case of the general epistle, and has something to do with love, something to do with fellowship, and also has something to do with getting to go in the right direction, being able to make sure that you walk and know where you're going and don't stumble. Equally, from the other readings I gave you, which were from Thomas, light also has this quality of hiding things. And sometimes the light is hidden. So there is light which hides, and there is light which is hidden. This is where we get into the esoteric side of things. And yet light is also the life that which is in all things, which is we can find from the very beginnings of the Gospel of St. John. And we can also hear it in those sayings from Thomas, that the light is related to the kingdom, the light is related to life. Now, part of the interesting idea, one of the interesting ideas that is behind a lot of Christianity, is that we are the dead, we are more dead, shall we say, than the higher realms, the higher worlds. And Jesus came down to give us more life. Jesus came into this world to give us more life. And there's a few different ways that this can be taken, and they're all accurate. They're all true. At every level, there is a truth. So there's a person who came in the first century, and or perhaps whether that's first century AD or first century BC, it's not really important. But there's somebody who came at that time and gave us more life. Came and gave us light, and in giving us light, gave us more life, and saved people. However, there's also, as you will notice, there's also many references within all of the Christian canonical Gospels, as well as the apocryphal works, that Jesus has been there since the beginning, and has come and sacrificed himself since the beginning. He's the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. So he's not someone that has only come once. He's not someone who has even only once come in Palestine and was, things happened to him, and then he ascended to heaven. But rather, there is a more general idea that the Christ Jesus can come to all of us, and is in fact always already with us at all times, and has always been, and actually came to give us more life, to give us his light, that we may have more life. So this light is something like knowledge, but it's not knowledge. But we can associate it with knowledge. It's something like consciousness, but it's not consciousness in the normal sense of the word consciousness. However, from this perspective, human beings have more life than animals, which have more life than plants, which have more life than stones, all of which are alive to some extent. And above human beings are the higher worlds, who have still more life than we do. And the idea is that this is the land of the dead, in a sense. This is the land of the dead, the world of the dead. And we, as Adam, came into this world and brought our life with us, that we may experience the world of death. And subsequently, we had more life added to us by others that came also from the higher worlds and shared with us their life. So something like what it is. And so in this case, light means something more like the ability to respond. And the extra life that is given has something more to do with the ability to respond properly. And that's how it ties in with love. If you think about it, stones can only respond in very, very limited ways to what's going on in the world. Plants can respond in less limited ways, but still more limited than the way animals can respond. And there's a whole gradient of animals, starting from the most simple organisms, which can respond in certain ways, but not in many, many other ways, reaching all the way up to the so-called higher animals, which can respond in a multifarious selection of ways. And then finally, you have human beings who are apparently both animal, as in we have bodies which are very similar, although not the same, very similar to other animals. And yet we also have a whole bunch of other things that enable us to respond, again, quite differently to even animals. So we have more life than animals because we can respond more than animals. So that's what it means by having more life. It doesn't mean that the life in animals is any less sacred or special than the life in humans, or that the life in animals, the life in plants is any less sacred or special than the life in animals, or that the life in stones, in minerals, is any less sacred or special than the life in any of the other higher kingdoms. But what it does mean is that the different kingdoms have different levels of responsiveness. And human beings of the four kingdoms mentioned have the greatest level of responsiveness. And if you go to the higher worlds, the so-called fifth and higher kingdoms, there are even greater levels of responsiveness. And this has to do with the levels of perception. A stone can perceive the temperature. We know this because stones know how to melt, or how to turn, and eventually turn into gases when they hit certain temperatures. So they have the ability to respond to temperatures. That's a kind of life. Plants have the ability to respond to sunlight, and they can grow towards sunlight. They can grow away from, they can grow away from dark and towards sunlight. They know how to respond to gravity. They grow against gravity. If you take plants into zero gravity areas, they get a bit confused and they do some really strange things. Animals can do, they can respond even more in many, many more ways. And each time you change kingdom, you change the number of dimensions through which the numbers of degrees of freedom through which responsiveness can occur. So that human beings are essentially four-dimensional beings, where animals are three-dimensional beings and plants are two-dimensional beings and stones are one-dimensional beings. So that doesn't mean that there aren't, human beings exist and operate in three dimensions. We can perceive three dimensions relatively easily, but we also have the ability to badly perceive a fourth dimension, a fourth spatial dimension. And our bad perception of this fourth spatial dimension often is recognized as time. It's not time. Some things are time, but a lot of what we perceive as time is really other things that are happening in a fourth spatial dimension. And much of our inner world is this fourth dimension, or operates four-dimensionally. So that's a little bit of extra light that we can add to this talk. Now, I don't want to go into it too much more deeply than that before I read some more things to you, because I think that it's worthwhile for everybody to come to their own conclusions about how they view God as light and what God as light means. If God as light, if God as light is the life of men, as it says in John, the life of human beings, what does that mean?